It's All Things Considered, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio, and I'm Dave Lawrence. When you think of music legends, few artists embody that term, like Beach Boys icon Brian Wilson, who tonight returns to Hawaii at the Blaisdell Concert Hall with his Pet Sounds 50th Anniversary World Tour, his first public Hawaii appearance since 2002. From the voice, to the pioneering songwriting and production of the albums, to his family legacy, the notoriously reclusive Brian Wilson has truly earned the term legend. We've been fortunate to have him as our guest twice before and have a new interview that we share today with Brian Wilson. Hey, Brian, thank you so much for being willing to take some time for us.
Hello, Dave. Thank you.
Tell us about the incredible show that you've got planned.
Well, we've done Pet Sounds for over a year now, so we know pretty well. I think that the people are going to like it this time.
Brings you all the way back to your debut here in the islands back in the early 60s. Any recollections of that?
I've been to Hawaii. I've been to Hawaii many times.
Seems like a perfect fit for the Beach Boys, huh?
Right.
And this tour has some special guests, Al Jardine, Blondie Chapman. Talk about bringing them on board and what it's been like working with them.
Well, they're both great singers, and it's been a pleasure working with them. They're great singers.
What have been some of the highlights, your favorite places you've been? Anything stick out in terms of playing so far? You've been out doing this a while.
Yeah, Japan. We had a good time in Japan.
And this is really one of those records. It's universal, huh? It takes you beyond just a beach sound. It's really something that people around the world can relate to.
Right. The lyrics, the melodies, the vocals, the instruments, they like it all.
How did you first come up with the album name, Brian, when you were coming up with this back in the mid-60s?
Well, Mike Love thought of the album, that sound.
But you had really come up with all the songs, and you constructed the arrangements on this, which so many people have looked at as pioneering. Wouldn't it be nice, for example, can you remember first coming up with some of that? Is there some story you can tell us?
Well, yeah, I wrote it right outside of a studio in the hall. On a cat piano, I wrote the chord pattern, and then I went home and I finished it.
And then something like You Still Believe in Me. This album is also legendary for its unique use of instrumentation and sounds. Like on that one, I understand you and Tony Atcher were plucking the piano strings with a bobby pin to get that unique sound in You Still Believe in Me.
Yeah, I remember doing that too.
Do you? What are some of the other interesting moments? Like, for example, you guys had your own dogs kind of became famous forever in this.
At the end of Caroline, no, the dogs bark, yeah.
Banana and Louie were their names, as I recall.
Right.
Also about this record, Brian, you were using the theremin. That's something that I understand. That was the first time it was ever used in any kind of pop song. Can you talk about bringing that tool in?
Well, theremin, we call it the Musicians Union. That's for a theremin player. They sent it over and we used it. We used it on Good Vibrations, too.
Did they send over someone to play it, too, or did you guys just mess around with it?
We just messed around with it, yeah.
To get the sound that you wanted. And speaking about messing around with things, one of the other things that's neat, on Caroline No, I understand it was, in fact, your father's idea to speed up the entire recording a half step.
Right. How did you know that?
I was just doing some research. I knew it was a special record. Do you remember when he made that suggestion?
Yeah, my dad told me, he said, speed it up and it'll sound better. We speeded up a half a note, and it sounded a lot nicer.
And in terms of those sort of special touches that you got on it, there's a great story of you calling up the boss of Capitol, Glenn Wallach, to get a 12-string guitar for Billy Strange to play on Sloop John B. Do you remember that?
Yeah, Billy Strange helped me out with the guitar arrangement.
And you just thought it needed a 12-string? You had one specially brought over just for that moment?
Yeah.
And the instrumental on there, Let's Go Away for a While, that has such a great sound. All these years later, it still has such a cool feel. I read that you called that among your favorite instrumentals that you did.
It's one of my favorites, yeah. It's a great instrumental.
Are there any tricky moments trying to play some of those things live?
Well, we've been touring for 18 years, me and the band.
And playing this particular record, were there any challenges to playing it live in its entirety?
Well, we tried to duplicate the sound on stage.
Right. When you think about that original recording and some of the elements of the sound, Glenn Campbell, he plays guitar on at least 5 tunes, I think, on that. Talk about working with Glenn in the studio on that and some great memories that you must have.
Well, it was great because Glenn's a nice guy, and he did it very fast. He got the guitar thing very fast.
When you were coming up with the record originally and constructing some of these arrangements, you ended up using like bicycle bells on some of the tunes. Do you remember particularly why you would choose to use something like that?
Well, my percussionist asked me if I he'd like me to do that. I said, sure.
Just to kind of give it an unusual sound, is that the idea, or was it to make it sound sort of youthful?
Well, we did it for kids. We wanted to make it for little kids.
You have songs like that, but then on the other side, you have songs like That's Not Me, very introspective song. Can you talk about first writing that one?
Yeah, me and Tony Asher wrote that. We wanted to get an introspective kind of a song.
Right, and how much of the lyrics is yours? Is that like split between the two of you guys?
Well, he wrote most of the lyrics.
Don't Talk, Put Your Head on My Shoulder. You've called it one of the sweetest songs I ever sang.
Well, I was only 24. So I could sing very high when I was 24.
This is not the first time that you've taken Pet Sounds out and played the whole thing live. Was it different when you did it back in 2000? I think that was the first time you played the whole album live, yeah?
Yeah, it was different. We didn't quite know it all that well then, but we know a lot better now.
So I was wondering if it was something where you really had to develop it and bring in the right people. Was that the same band that you had back then working with you?
Yeah.
The title track, Pet Sounds, I understand some of the percussion on that was very unique. It included Coke cans.
Yeah, well, I tried to get it to a James Bond movie, and they turned it down, so I put it on Pet Sound.
You had really liked Thunderball, I guess, the sound for that?
Yeah.
Who did you approach? You actually tried to get it in the James Bond, and they rejected the song?
Yeah.
What a loss for them. That would have been a great one in there. When it came to things like the harpsichord, flutes, did you have outside musicians who helped give you ideas, or was it your idea to use some of those unique instrumentation?
Well, I thought of using the instrumentation, yeah.
So that was all in your head before you had worked out with Tony. What was it about Tony that made you think he'd be a good partner for writing this landmark record?
I just liked the way he talked. You know, he talked very creatively, and he worked for an advertising agency, so he was the right choice.
Is the way that he talked, I like that. That makes a lot of sense in terms of what the appeal might be about it. Phil Spector's Wall of Sound production technique, how much had that influenced you when it came to doing this record?
Well, I really like the way he produced records, so I learned from him how to combine instruments together.
So it was part of that, just listening to how he was doing it. How much were you involved when this record was reissued?
Very much.
What form are the tapes in? You've got the original masters, or do you have the multi-tracks as well?
The masters, yeah.
But not the multi-tracks?
Right.
And when you want to work on something, Brian, do you have a little studio set up at your house so that you can do this, or do you got to go somewhere else to do that?
We have to go somewhere else, yeah.
When we go to see this concert live, what else is going to be happening in addition to you playing the entire Pet Sounds record?
About 25 Beach Boy songs.
Do you basically have one set that you've been doing now for a couple years?
We change it around from week to week, but we basically, it's the same set.
When you go to play that record live, there's got to be moments that you enjoy more than others. What's some of your favorite tracks on there?
On the Pet Sounds?
Yeah.
God Only Knows, Wouldn't Be Nice, Caroline No, That's Not Me, and Here Today.
What was the reason when you mentioned Caroline No? Originally, that was put out as your debut solo single, yet it appeared on the Beach Boys record. Why was that released as a solo single at the time?
I told the company I liked to release it because I liked it. I liked the song.
And was that sort of also to introduce you as a solo artist, too?
Yeah, yeah.
When you look back at that record now and you have to go play it live, is it bringing out a lot of memories when you go around the country and you're playing it live? Are there ever moments that you sort of reflect on some of the earlier days when you go into a certain city? Like, for example, when you come back to Hawaii, you made your debut here in the early 60s. What are some memories that you've got of coming to Hawaii over the years?
I just remember the audience just liked our music a lot.
You're the man. I appreciate it, Brian.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being our guest.
Well, thanks for the interview.
Take care.
Thank you. Aloha, it's Brian Wilson. You're tuned in with my good friend Dave Lawrence.
Together. Wouldn't it be nice if come true.